The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Well, in a late night social media post, Donald Trump said, "It's an honour to kill the deranged scumbags who govern Iran." We've now entered day 14 of the conflict, with significant news this morning that the United States has eased sanctions against Russian oil. Let's get the latest now from the Middle East. I'm joined by Middle East journalist and analyst Borzu Daragahi. We'll also speak to the former fighter pilot and military analyst Sean Bell in just a moment, and we'll hear from Sky's Sally Lockwood in Dubai. But first, Borzu, to you, thank you for joining us this morning. Donald Trump's comments overnight suggest that he is very invested in this conflict. But can you give us a state of play on this Friday morning as we head for 2 weeks of this war?
Well, there's a lot of lying going on and a lot of censorship. So it's really hard to get an assessment of what is being hit and how it's being hit. One thing we do know is that a U.S. Fuel resupply plane crashed, and the crew, the fate of the crew is unknown over Iraq. Now, the U.S. says that this was not related to any kind of hostile action. But right now, I think that it's just we're in a situation where every single party in this war has an incentive to lie about every aspect of it. And so I think it's tough to figure that out. I think the main thing that we do see is that, you know, is the oil, oil not coming out of the Persian Gulf, supply affecting world economies and so on. So I think that is a significant development right now.
And Donald Trump's suggestion that the tankers could be accompanied safely through the Strait of Hormuz, that's probably unlikely to be a runner.
Well, I think that's kind of delusional. It just those escort ships, those U.S. military escort ships, could be hit by the Iranians. They present really good targets for the Iranians. So far, the U.S. military ships have stayed in the Gulf of Oman. They've stayed in the Arabian Sea. They've stayed in the Eastern Mediterranean away from direct Iranian short-range missile fire. But if they were to come through the Strait of Hormuz, they would present a target. And it does appear that Iran has basically given up all restraint.
And for the Russians, then, there is something of a win here. I mean, we know that they had been permitted to sell some of the oil that was at sea in the early days of this conflict, but now we have the Americans easing sanctions against them further.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big win for Russia and China. On the one hand, Russia and China are both providing intelligence and other support to Iran. On the other hand, they're watching the Americans bleed, their credibility damaged worldwide. And, you know, on the other hand, Russia is getting high prices for its oil as well, and sees pressure on the Europeans causing the U.S. to ease sanctions.
Okay, and talk to me a little bit about what you see as the next step for Iran in its pushback here. We know that they've targeted the Gulf states. They've caused a lot of worry and concern. We've seen the exodus of people from places like Dubai and the UAE, which we'll hear more about in a moment from Sally. But their aim has always been, Borzu, hasn't it, to spread the theatre of war. Are they successful in doing that?
It does seem like they are successful in doing that. There's two things they could still do. One is, you know, right now Saudi Arabia is relieving some of the pressure on world markets by using a pipeline to move its oil from the Persian Gulf to the Red Sea and then through the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb to the rest of the world. Iranians could activate the Houthis in Yemen to block off that Bab el-Mandeb Strait. If you look on a map, you'll see that little narrow choke point there. The other thing that they have warned that they would do is to target U.S. tech companies, Google, Palantir, Microsoft. They have huge presences in the Gulf and in Israel, and those companies are embedded in the U.S. military, apparently used for targeting and using the AI tools for their war efforts. And so Iran has hinted that those companies could be targets as well.
But we just don't know how much Iran has left in the tank, do we, in terms of their capabilities after the American onslaught?
Yeah, we have no idea. And really, but they are kind of consistently launching about 10 missiles a day towards Israel in terms of their ballistic missiles, and they still have the drones. What we don't know, and this is key, is what has happened to their drone and missile factories that are built underground. And we just have no intelligence on that, and it's not worthwhile to trust the Americans on that.
Borzu, thank you very much. Borzu Daragahi there. Let's go to Sean Bell, former fighter pilot, military analyst and co-host of the Red Matrix podcast. Good morning to you, Sean.
Good morning, Claire.
So what do you think of this news about the Russian oil and the easing of sanctions against Russia? Vladimir Putin will be delighted.
Well, I think many European leaders will be absolutely distraught. It sort of hands victory to President Putin. One of the things that, rather than getting directly involved in the war with Russia invading Ukraine, what Western leaders have been doing is just making it economically very, very difficult for Russia to continue prosecuting the war. You have to remember that each day, some of these attacks that Russia's been doing with their missiles, their drones, their people, it's over $1 billion a day, and that just gets burnt. In other words, it just gets lost. And there's been lots of reports of the Russian economy gradually spiraling downwards. But now, all of a sudden, overnight, suddenly money is going to be pouring into the Russian coffers. And that will be absolutely delighted. And I suspect many Western leaders in Europe will be just going, this is another example of the US operating autonomously and not looking more broadly. It's a disaster for Ukraine and a very, very happy day for President Putin.
But as we saw at the start of this war, when President Trump decided to go ahead with it, Europe is acting as the bystander here. And once again, 2 weeks in with this move, there's not a whole lot they can do about it, is there?
No, there isn't. And I do think we are, I mean, as President Trump's probably finding out now, it's history shows it's quite easy to start wars. It's very difficult to end them. It sounds like he wanted a short, sharp shock. And as you were talking about earlier, you know, although America is a superpower, there's no doubt it is pummeled Iranian military capability right the way down. But unless you're prepared to put boots on the ground, all of that is to naught, because the Iranians still have their leadership. They still have probably over 70,000 of these Shahed drones. They still have their proxies, and they still have their foot on the throat of the West with the Straits of Hormuz. Now, all of those can be solved, but they're going to take a lot of time. And that is time that President Trump clearly doesn't have.
Yeah, I just wonder about that. I mean, he did say at the beginning of this that it would be a couple of weeks, 4 or 5 at most. But just going by his statement last night on Truth Social, where he said, we've unparalleled firepower, unlimited ammunition and plenty of time. Watch what happens to these deranged scumbags today. It's just interesting that he mentions time, because you would have expected, as time went on over the last 2 weeks, that his nervousness might have increased. I mean, we saw him intervening to try and bring the price of oil down during the week. We know about the midterms, which are clearly on his mind. But then he comes out overnight and says something like that, which gives no indication that he wants to wrap this up quickly.
No, and the danger of the war being conducted via Truth Social is particularly unhelpful. I mean, I think here what we're seeing is a president operating on his own instincts. I would have been, when the books are written about this, Claire, I suspect General Kane, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who provides military advice to Trump, eventually will hear what the military advice will have been. And I'd be amazed. I have been personally involved in war gaming, where we've looked at these sorts of scenarios. And the most dangerous is that Iran just hunkers down, because there's no appetite for putting boots on the ground. Therefore, as soon as you unlock the pin, as soon as you go and take military action against Iran, inevitably you find yourself at this end game, which is where we are today. That is exactly something Trump can't afford. If only he'd listened to the briefings before. He keeps saying previous presidents were not brave. They were weak for not doing what he's doing. They weren't weak. They were smart. They were listening to the military briefings and trying to find a political way to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. He's got his hands in the mangle now. It's going to be very difficult to get them out.
Yeah, I mean, you do wonder how well it was thought through. I mean, clearly the price of oil was going to spike the minute you went in. Clearly, you know, and someone like you would know this very well, the Strait of Hormuz was going to be controlled and the clampdown was going to come from the Iranians. And even if they do run out of drones and missiles, they're still going to be able to control the Strait, aren't they?
No, you're absolutely right. And when you say run out of drones, I mean, we did a bit of analysis on this, because, you know, America has some very, very high-tech protective missiles, one of which is Patriot. You hear about that all the time. It's being given to Ukraine for protection and the like. But if you look at the numbers, And they're using them far faster than they can ever produce them, even if American defense industries quadruple. And we looked at the math, it's about 10 weeks of the current pace, and America would run out. Now, America can't countenance that. Meanwhile, these Shahed drones, they can produce them at 5,000 to 6,000 a month. Now, if yes, America may well have been able to successfully target the factories. But what about the underground facilities where all these are stored? And Iran has been planning this for years, probably decades, knowing full well this day would come. And all they're doing now is opening the playbook, and they know that time is not on the West side. So all of a sudden, whatever the West does now, short of putting boots on the ground, I think the Straits of Hormuz will be a really interesting one. I've talked to some of my military colleagues, and they say, eventually, if you want to solve this, you've got to put boots on the ground on the Iranian side and create a buffer zone which makes sure that the Straits is free in perpetuity. Will the Americans have the appetite for that? Because that's a long-term play, and it will certainly put American troops in harm's way.
Sean, thank you for being with us this morning. Sean Bell. I'm also joined by Sally Lockwood, currently based in Dubai. And Sally is an international journalist, presenter and host of The State of the World on YouTube. Sally, thank you for being with us this morning. You're very welcome to the programme. What's been happening in Dubai over the last number of hours?
Oh, good morning to you. Well, in the last 24 hours, we've had more missile and drone interceptions by UAE air defences. But some of those drones do get through at the moment. Not many, but some do get through because there's just so many being fired in, although we have seen a reduced number in recent days. But falling shrapnel seems to be the biggest risk at the moment in terms of security. We've had another two incidents today. Just this morning, you know, we've had a couple of emergency alerts already on our mobile phones, and two incidents, one in an industrial area of central Dubai where falling debris caused a fire in a warehouse area by the looks of it. And then also the financial district of Dubai, which we understand is now a target by Iran. They've said they're going to target financial centres and banks. And that has seen also falling debris hit one of the buildings there this morning too.
So what is life like there now? I mean, is it sort of a weird situation where life continues as normal, or is it very disrupted?
You know, it's a really good question, because I'm not just a journalist, I'm also a resident here. And I think I have been kidding myself for the last 14 days that life is going to return to normal. And I'm sort of asking myself when I'm going to get my old life back. And I'm not sure we are. It almost feels strangely like COVID, where there was a real rupture in how we lived our lives. And even though we're still kind of going about our daily life and doing normal things, there is all this other stuff happening at the same time. So back in the pandemic, it was COVID. And right now it's these daily attacks. So, you know, to give you an example, as a resident, my two-year-old went to the park this morning, but she was rushed home half an hour later because we had an emergency alert on our phones for incoming missiles. Mm-hmm. So I think that perhaps sums up the dual reality that we're now living here. And I should say as well, the place feels quieter, you know, people are leaving.
And what happens when you get the alert? Where do you go?
The alert is essentially tells you to shelter in place in the nearest safe place. So if you're at home, you're supposed to stay away from windows. And in a lot of houses here and apartments, you know, they're new and there's a lot of glass, and that's quite hard. Certainly where we live, there's only a couple of, you know, small, tiny rooms, like one bathroom and maybe a cupboard where we could potentially stay away from windows. Mm-hmm. And but that is the advice. You know, this is not a country that is used to experiencing war and threats to its security like this. We're not Israel. There are not shelters here. There aren't safe rooms here. You know, people aren't used to hearing air raid sirens here. And we did hear those in the first few days of the war, but it's now emergency alerts that come through on our phones instead of sirens. Yeah. But it is a very new reality here, and people are having to adjust very quickly. But something I should say is that people are adapting. You know, human beings are very good at adapting, and we're already seeing people getting used to this new reality. Mm-hmm. But it is very strange.
Well, the headlines here in our newspapers and the coverage of this and analysis of what's happening in Dubai in particular tell us that the Dubai dream is over. Does it feel like that?
Yeah. I don't know. I think for people who live here, who are still here, they're very protective of a country that they've lived in for some time and many love. And they, you know, are posting updates to say, you know, I feel very safe. And I should say, you know, I don't feel at risk physically. I feel safe because luckily the country has world-class air defense systems and they're doing a great job. But in terms of, I think, the confidence of the place, I think that potentially has shattered for some people. I know people who have left the country and evacuated and don't want to come back. I also have had many conversations in the last few days with people who work for global companies here, many of which are in finance, and they're being evacuated because their companies have said to them, look, you know, we're pulling all of you out along with your families. We'll pay for alternative accommodation elsewhere because we're concerned this conflict could endure. It has the potential to escalate and we want to get you out now while we still can. And I think in terms of the Dubai dream being over, it's too soon to say that. I think it really depends on how long the war lasts. But I think potentially we will see an impact, at least in the short term, in terms of people's confidence coming to live here, being happy living here. And also, of course, for the tourism industry, people wanting to come on holiday here. I think that will all be impacted in the short term.
Sally, it's really good to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time for being with us from Dubai. That's Sally Lockwood.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.